Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Chof Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we started a discussion concerning temed. Temed is the byproduct of a winemaking process, namely the remnants, the residue of the grapes, the grape seeds, the grape skins that are left after you drained off the wine from your wine making process. After the wine has been drained off, one can add water to the residue grapes and skins, seeds, and hope that it will also absorb, the water will absorb a grape or wine flavor and turn into a fine beverage. Until that happens, our Mishnah had taught on Chof Hei Omid Beis that the temed before it ferments is viewed basically as water, and therefore you cannot buy temed before it ferments with kesef meiser sheni. Kesef meiser sheni being used only for the purchase of something classified as pira as opposed to water. And likewise, if 3 lug of this unfermented temed would fall into a mikveh, it would ruin it. A 3 lug is a shiur of drawn water that, as opposed to rainwater, which is kosher for a mikveh, drawn water will render a mikveh unfit if it falls into a mikveh that is less than 40 sa'ah. On the other hand, when the temed ferments, the Mishnah taught that it can be purchased with meiser sheni funds and will not ruin a mikveh, being that it has then a wine status. The Gemara wanted to know who the author of the Mishnah is. We gave a great deal of introduction to this topic and discussed it at length in our previous shiur, so for a fuller appreciation of this sukya, it would be of great benefit to have listened to the previous shiur, the end of Chof Hei Omid Beis. At this point in the Gemara, we are in the middle of this discussion in terms of Shita's different opinions as to who the author of our Mishnah is. In our previous shiur, we saw Rav Nachman suggest that the author was Reb Yehuda, who was cited in a brisa at the end of Chof Hei Omid Beis. Before getting on to the second opinion as to who the author is, and you can see with the markings that on Chof Vav Amud Aleph, there is a second triangle also numbered as number 2 to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text, less than halfway down the page. That will be the second approach to who the author of our Mishnah is. But until that point, we are picking up the Gemara now on the second line from the top at the end of the line, the Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Bar Avua, Temed Shelokhoi Bekesef Meiser. Someone purchased temed with meiser sheni funds. Bearing in mind that meiser sheni funds are used only for the purchase of things that are classified as pira. Pira is fruits, vegetables, korbonos, and wine as well. Now, he bought temed. At the point that he bought it, it was not fermented. However, ulebasov hichmitz, it sat around for a while and it then fermented. Kona Meiser. That means that the money that he used to pay for it, its sanctity is transferred onto that which he bought, and that the money that is in the hands of the seller is in fact considered chulin, or redeemed money, because of the transfer of the kedusha from the money onto that which you bought. The interesting point here is that when you bought it, it had not yet fermented. So the fact that later on it fermented legitimatizes this kind of purchase. In other words, using of Meiser Sheni funds for what turns out to have a wine status. My taima, why is this sale considered acceptable? In other words, the use of Meiser Sheni funds for buying this beverage, bearing in mind that at the time he bought it, it had not yet fermented. The Gemara explains, Igloi Milsa Lamafreya, it becomes obvious retroactively, the Pirohu, that it in fact was categorized as Pira being those that a category that includes wine. Elo Masnisin Dikotoni Hichmitz in Lo Hichmitz Lo. The Gemara now asks on our Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if you acquired or you have temed before it fermented, you cannot buy with Meiser Sheni such a beverage, unfermented temed. Why is that the case? Dilma I Shavke Havi Machmitz. Maybe he would, if he would have left it for a while, it would have fermented. Rashi adds that the majority of temed situations do ferment. Omar Rabo answers, our Mishnah is talking about a case where kishishir mimenu bekois velo hichmitz. The temed that, let's say, would have been purchased before it fermented, the seller had a separate cup of the same beverage set off to the side from the same batch that he sold, and over the course of time it never fermented. So we don't have the opportunity in the case of the Mishnah like we just featured here, where we could say it retroactively show that it was wine, because once again the case of the Mishnah is that we had a cup full of this temed that was set aside from the batch that was sold or would have been sold, and it never fermented. Now we come to the second approach as to who the author of our Mishnah is. Omar, Rova Omar, Ha Moni, our Mishnah is according to whom? Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri hi. It conforms to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. We now have a Tanaic source. You can see it appears in a frame. In our Gemara marking system, we attempt to present all the Tanaic sources that the Gemara quotes in frames so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara literature. We are going to end up, according to Rava, labeling our Mishnah as being authored by Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. He, when it comes to establishing identity of beverages, and we're talking within this realm of water, wine, he says you define the beverage or the liquid by virtue of its color, the way it appears. This has ramifications to our topic of temed and the purchase of it with Meiser Sheni money, and with regard to its ability to ruin a mikveh, as we mentioned earlier briefly and at greater length in our previous shiur. So we will continue with the following source, and we are emphasizing once again that we gave a great deal of background at the end of our previous shiur, so we will, for the sake of brevity, continue with the Gemara here. So we are going to tell you that our Mishnah that made a distinction with regard to the temed before it fermented as opposed to after it fermented, that before it fermented it has a din of water, it has a status of water, after it ferments it has the status of wine. This will conform to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, as we will see shortly. Disnan, we have a Tanaic source that talks about water getting mixed into a mikveh. Gimel lugin mayim, three lug. Lug is the name of a measure, a liquid measure. So you have three lug of water, chaser kurtuv, meaning it's not a complete three lug, it's almost three lug of drawn water. Drawn water is not suitable for the completion of a mikveh. Shenofal l'soichon kurtuv yayin. And into this three lug of mayim minus a kurtuv, there fell in a kurtuv of wine. A little bit of wine. Umar ehen kemara yayin. Like you have in food coloring, a small amount can alter the color of whatever it was poured into or dripped into. So to here, the wine changed. The little bit of wine, the kurtuv, which is a very small amount of wine that fell into the three lug of mayim, changed the color into this mixture. Umareyan kemara yayin. And now this is you have a total now of three lug, because you started off with three lug of water minus a kurtuv, and now a kurtuv of yayin fell into this. The kurtuv we mentioned is a very small measure. It falls into this water and gives it a wine color. And now, the naflu lemikveh, this now falls into a mikveh that doesn't have the required 40 saw in it yet. Lo paslu, it doesn't ruin the mikveh. Gimel lugin mayim chaser kurtiv. Once again, a case of three lug minus a kurtiv of water. Shenofal l'soichon kurtiv cholov, and a little bit of milk fell into this. Umar ehen kemare mayim, and it creates the impression or the look. It still has the look of water. As you can well imagine, milk, a small amount of milk isn't going to alter the change of a much larger amount of water. So you now have this water milk mixture. The naflu lemikveh lo pasluhu. According to the Tanakama, the mikveh is not affected because you didn't have a complete three lug of water that falls into the mikveh. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer HaKol Holech Achar Hamareh. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri will tell you that in this last case, the mikveh will be ruined, because how much fell into the mikveh? Well, at the end of the day, three lug of liquid that looks like water. The fact that it looks like water means, as far as Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is concerned, it is water, and three lug is enough to ruin the mikveh. We see from Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who focuses on the look that something has. Lav Omer Rabbi Yochanan, is it not so that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri goes boser chazu, so he follows appearance, azlinon? Let's read that again. Lav Omer Rabbi Yochanan boser chazu azlinon. Did he not say that we go after appearance? Hochanami, so too in the case of the temed, zeal, boser, chazusa, v'taimo. Follow the look and the taste. The chazusa dahai, the appearance of this temed before it ferments, equals mayo ninu. It appears as water. The Rabbeinu Gershom, in the lower part of the page, says at the first of the widest lines, Hocha nami betemed, ozil boser chazusa, v'kevon de lo hichmitz, since it hasn't fermented, tam v'chazusa mayim ninu. It has the taste and the appearance of water. And with all that in mind, we understand why the Mishnah said that if you're dealing with temed shelo hichmitz, and we're assuming now it has the look of water, one cannot buy it with Meiser Sheni funds, and it will be capable of passeling the mikveh. As we continue in the Gemara, we are about to encounter another diamond. The Gemara will tell us, and of course this diamond is labeled as number 2, that this is designed, this diamond is designed to present a second opinion. So we have Rav Nachman on the end of Chof Hei Amid Beis, and now you have Rav Elazar, two opinions as to how to explain the Tanaic source that appeared at the end of Chof Hei Amid Beis. So it's necessary for us to review a little bit. There was a Tanaic source quoted four lines from the end of Chof Hei Amid Beis, which said a person had added water to the grape residue, and after a while he withdrew from that the same quantity of water, the same quantity of liquid as was the water that he poured over the grape residue initially. In other words, to keep it as a simple case, he poured one cup of water over the grape residue and let it sit for a while, and then came back sometime later and poured off of the grape residue one cup of liquid. The Tanakhama said, under such circumstances, it is considered water. And it's potter, it's exempt from any need for tithing. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, said that it is obligated to be tithed. Rav Nachman established that we saw in our previous shiur, that the circumstances there was that had actually fermented. If it would not have fermented, according to Rav Nachman, then even the Tana, Reb Yehuda, would have exempted it from any need for tithing. According to Rav Nachman, therefore, if it would not have fermented, everyone would agree that it has a water status, and as such, water needs no tithing. Now, that whole approach, the approach of Rav Nachman, is at odds with the approach of Reb Elazar. And that's what the Gemara says now, Upligo de Reb Elazar. The Yom Reb Elazar, Hakol Moidim. Everyone will agree, even Reb Yehuda, She'ein mafrishin olov mimokom acher. If you have temed that did not ferment, so you don't take other temed and tithe from it to cover this unfermented temed. Elo im kein hichmitz. Unless the temed that you just prepared has fermented, then you can take other fermented temed, and use it to tithe this fermented temed. But now the main point is really what is to be read in between the lines. The Reb Elazar just said that everyone will agree that you're not mafrish, you don't tithe for this unfermented temet from an outside source. However, from within itself, Rabbi Yehuda would say that it is chayev to be tithed, even though we're talking about temet that has not fermented. And that's the point of difference between Rav Nachman's approach and Reb Elazar's approach. Rav Nachman said that had it not fermented, there would be no need at all for hafrasha, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda being a more stringent opinion. Rabbi Elazar says that if it hasn't fermented, there is a need for hafrasha. Just don't use an outside source of temed for the hafrasha. Continuing in the Gemara, Kosovar, Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion below hichmitz machlokes, that the machlokes tanoim that was featured on Chof Hei Amid Beis is actually a machlokes concerning temed that has not fermented. The ad kan lo mechayev Reb Yehuda ela minei ubei. With regard to unfermented temed, Reb Yehuda, who said mechayev, he says that it's chayev to be hufrash, to be tithed from within itself. That means you don't go to an outside source of temed and tithe to cover this, because what you are tithing now, what this unfermented temed, it might turn out to be water. So the Gemara points out that up till this point, Reb Yudah mentions that there's a chiyuv hafrosha if you're going to do the tithe from the temed itself. Avol me'almo lo, but from other temed, even if the other temed has as well not fermented, don't use it to cover this. Why? Dilma osi la'afrushi min achiyuv al ha'poter u min ha'poter al achiyuv. Now, some explanation. If you have, and we'll focus now on the case of two jugs of unfermented temed. Are they going to ferment or not? Well, we don't know. It could very well be that jug number one will not ferment, and jug number two will ferment. And if I tithe from jug number one to cover jug number two, I am tithing min ha-poter al-achiv from something that's exempt. Namely, if jug one doesn't ferment, it's basically water. And a hafrosha like that doesn't solve the tevel problem, doesn't remove the untithed status from a jug that will ferment, that needs tithing. And anyone who drinks from jug number two will end up being chayav for consuming tevel, because no effective hafrosha was done. Now, we might have, and if you look at it the other way around, if you attempt to mafrish from jug number two, again, we have these two jugs that have not fermented, but jug number two eventually does ferment and jug one does not. And a person takes off from jug number two that eventually ferments and uses that as a tithe to cover jug number one. That's called menachiyuv ala poter. Now the tithe that he takes from jug number two to exempt jug number one, but if jug number one turns out to be water at the end of the day, then the tithing that you took does not take on the truma status. It was designed. Truma is when you separate something as a tithe to exempt something that really needs tithing. But if it doesn't really need tithing, as is in our example, jug number one that never ferments, so that which you remove from jug number two doesn't take on the truma status, and it will have an original tevel, untithed status. And if even a kohen, if he eats that, he would be chayav misa bidei shamayim, death at the hands of heaven, if it was done knowingly. Therefore, as we look over this entire sugya, we had our Mishnah, and we tried to define who the author of the Mishnah is. To that, we had two approaches. They were reflected in triangles. We had the Rav Nachman's suggestion that our Mishnah was according to Rabbi Yehuda. We had a Rava's suggestion that our Mishnah was according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. In addition to that, we had a Machlokes Tanoim featured in a source four lines from the bottom of Chof Hamad Beis. And as far as the circumstances of that Machlokes, we saw Rav Nachman's approach, who said that we were talking about temed that had already fermented. Had it not fermented, Rabbi Yehuda would have said no obligation to tithe whatsoever. And then we saw Rabbi Elazar's approach that set up the machlokes concerning temed that had not fermented. And the issue was, do I tithe from that temed itself? The Tanakhama said no, and Reb Yudah said yes, you have to tithe from it. And in such a case, since you're tithing from the temet itself, when you're looking at Reb Yudah, mimon of shach, there's no problem if it doesn't ferment. So I just removed water from water, and if it does ferment, so that which I removed is representative of that which from that which it came. So if it does eventually ferment, it's wine that I removed to cover wine, which is also fine. And the end of our sugya on Omer Aleph that we just learned simply says that even Rabbi Yehuda says to Mafresh from the unfermented Temed, don't use an outside source of Temed to exempt this Temed, because of the potential problem of min achiyuv ala poter or min apoter ala achiyuv, as we explained. Continuing in the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan haTemed ad shelo hichmitz. If you have the Temed beverage before it ferments, mashiko b'mayim. You have a possibility of, in the event that the Temed had become tome, you can have a vessel of your tome Temed that hasn't fermented filled to the brim, immerse the vessel in a mikveh and have the brim or the meniscus of beverage contact the surface water of the mikveh, and at that point as you immerse the cup, of course we're not talking about submerging it completely, but just to the point of the rim where there's a little bit of a dome, which we refer to as the meniscus, that's in the cup, comes into contact with the surface water of the mikveh, that's called hashoka. And at that point, water, and this is a unique halacha with regard to water, water that had become tame can achieve tahara through its contact with the mikveh. However, misha hichmitz, if you're dealing with temed that fermented already, then it will have a wine status, and wine does not have tahara in a mikveh. Ein mashiko b'mayim. Then there is no mashiko, which is this tahara process, this purification process via the contact with the surface liquid, that will not work. Ein mashiko b'mayim. Omar Rava loy shanu. Rava is about to say a halacha that will be challenged by Rav Gavia a little bit later. So for the time being, Rava makes a distinction which is hard to understand, and the Gemara will challenge it. Rava says loy shanu, this point that there's a possibility of being metaher the temed, elo shetamdo b'mayim tahorim. He added to the grape residue water that was tahor, v'nitme'u, and subsequently it became tomei, aval. Tameyame korolo, if he used tomei water to prepare the temed, then the hashoka will not work. And of course, we're talking about a case that it hasn't fermented. But according to Rava, since you used tomei water to prepare this temed that hasn't yet fermented, nevertheless, it cannot achieve tahara. You'll notice to the immediate right-hand side of Gemara text in a dalet that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. All of the lines of the Gemara, which last till the Mishnah, represent a rejection of Rava. Or Ozal, Rav Gavia, Mi Beik Seal, Rav Gavia from Ksil, from the place of called Beik Seal, went Ozal I Omra Lishmaitse Kameh to Rav Ashi and reported this teaching to Rav Ashi. And the question arose, Mai Shno Tmeim Meikora Dolo, why is it that Temed that was prepared with Tome water, you say, has no hashoka? The Amrinon, because we figure, Aidi demaya yakiri, since the water, and we're talking about the tome water, is heavier, yakiri, heavy, shachni tatoi, it settles to the bottom of the vessel, upira kofi mileel, and the grape residue floats to the top, so that at the surface of the vessel, you will have grape residue and not water. Velo kosaklu hashoka lamaya, and there is then no actual contact between the water that's below the surface and the mikveh. Well, if that's your explanation for why, when you prepared it with mayim to mayim, that hashoka doesn't work, because the grape lees, the grape residue, occupies the surface of the vessel. Well, ihachi tahorim of sof nitmunami. Well, the same problem would be if you used tohor water to prepare the temed, and subsequently it became tamei, and then I brought it to the mikveh in anticipation of accomplishing this hashoka. And yet you say that in that case it does work. So how does it work in the case of tahurim levesof nitmu elo mevalbali? You stir it. If you stir it, so the surface of the temed vessel that you are bringing to the mikveh has water. The surface is water because it's stirred, so that the grape material hasn't amassed at the top. Well, hachanami. So too, if you have tamei meikora, if you prepared the temed with tamei water at the outset, if you want to bring it to the mikveh, mevalbalis, just stir it, and you can accomplish hashoka. So as you can see from this approach that Rav Gavia Mibeik Seal and Rav Ashi, they, through their discussion, it comes out not to make the distinction like Rava had made. The Mishnah, a new topic, and before we learn the topic, let's look at the topic heading, the Nosei, in our Shas Ozer, the Mark Gemaras that you are using that appear on your screen. You can see in the outside margin the Nosei, and we've written there Gilaim, ages, Shiesh Schus Ha'av Bevito Haktana, or Naro, ages during which time a father has certain rights over his daughter. Ktano is up till age 12. Nara is from 12 till 12 and a half. And what rights are we talking about? One is lemochra, that is to sell her into a work situation. Sometimes it's loosely translated as servitude, but essentially he's selling his daughter to someone else for whom she will work for until she becomes a nara, let us say. And number two, as far as father's rights are concerned, lekabel knas im nansa, to receive the Torah fine payment. Fine being 50 shekel, 50 pieces of silver, as is ordained by the Torah in the event that his daughter is raped, and we're talking about this young girl. We're not talking about above these ages. If you're dealing with a teenager, a daughter, then there is no knas that's paid to the father. The Mishnah: Kol mokoim shiesh mecher ein knas. When you're dealing with ages that the father has a right to sell her, those are ages during which the father will not be able to collect knas. V'chol mokoim shiesh knas ein mecher, and wherever there is a knas payment, which is indicative of a certain age, then that's a point in time, ein mecher, that the father can no longer sell her. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Zu Divrei Rabbi Meir. This Mishnah represents Rabbi Meir's opinion. In other words, the Mishnah that says there's a sharp contrast between mecher rights and knas receipt rights. In other words, that there's no overlap by way of ages. Avol, Chachomim Omru, Yesh Knas B'Mokom Mecher. According to the Chachomim, you could have a scenario where a father is receiving Knas payment at the same time or at the same age of the girl when the father could still have sold her. Now this will become clear when we see the following Braisa. Desanya. Ketano mibas yoim echod ad shetovi shnei sairus. A girl from one day until she reaches the age of shnei sairus, the two pubic hairs, which we associate with age 12. Yesh lo mecher v'ein lo knas. A father can sell her, but there is no knas payment made for what we would term a ktano who is raped. However, Mishatovi Shnei Cyrus Ad Shetiboger, from the point of the appearance of the two hairs until Bagrus. Bagrus, we generally define as 12 and a half. So it's a 6-month period. Yesh lo knas v'ein lo mecher. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's a period of time, the Na'arus period, that if she's raped, there is a fine. But since she's gone over 12, the father can no longer sell her. Shehoya Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir has been known to say, Kol mokoim sheyesh mecher ein knas. Wherever there is a selling rights, a sale rights that the father has, that's in ein knas. There is no fine payment to the father, because we're dealing with a ktana, and according to Rabbi Meir, a ktana, when raped, is not the rapist does not pay the knas. The chol mokom sheyesh knas, and when there is a knas obligation, that means she's over 12, ein mecher. There is no longer a sale right that the father has concerning his daughter. The Chachomim Omrim, Ktano Mibas Sholoi Shonim V'Yomechod V'Ad Shetiboger Yesh Lo Knas. The Chachomim disagree with Rabbi Meir, and they say that from age 3 years and a day, that's an age which we call she's Ro'oi Labia, that she's physically, we'll say, fit for intimacy. So she's called Ro'i Labia at that age. So from that age until 12 and a half, Tibo here is a lashon of Bagrus, which means legal adulthood, which in the Gemara is at 12 and a half. At that point, Yesh, from he says that from 3 till 12 and a half, Yesh lo knas. There is grounds for paying knas in the event that this girl is raped. The Gemara asks in wonderment, which we call b'tmiha, knas in mecher lo. You're saying there's only, it sounds like there's only knas, and what, the father can't sell her? And that's like, of course it's not true. Of course he can sell her. Amos, or rather say, more accurately, af knas b'moko mecher, that from age 3, up till, we'll say up till Na'arus, up till 12, you have both Knas and Mecher. So when it says in this source, Yesh lo Knas, during those ages, not all of this time, but almost all of the time, both things exist concurrently, the possibility of receiving Knas and the right to sell. We have a little summary of the Rabbonan Shita on the outside margin called Sikum, which is a summary Shitas Chachamim. So from birth till 3, there is only sale, no knas, because up till 3 she's called Eino Roi Labia. So the onus, the rape, is not considered a rape of we'll say of financial obligation. From 3 till 12, here you have both. You have Yesh Mecher and Knas. From 12 to 12 and a half, there is Knas, but there's no Mecher. The Mishnah. Kol mokom sheyesh miyun ein chalitza. V'chol mokom sheyesh chalitza ein miyun. Miyun is a phenomenon of a girl who was rabbinically married by her brother, married off, that is, by her brother or her mother. This is a case where a ketana, a young girl, a minor, lost her father. There is a provision, a rabbinic provision, that her mother or brother can marry her off to somebody. However, if she expresses her disinterest in continuing with the man that she was married to, she can remove herself from that relationship through an expression of "I don't want to continue with him," which she leaves him without the need for a formal get, a formal divorce document. That's miyun, and it's a, we'll call it departure, that's all based on a what was a rabbinic a rabbinic marriage, rabbinic as opposed to something that's Torah based. The Mishnah here tells us that, once again, as far as ages are concerned, as long as she can do miyun, and miyun is generally understood, we will see a different shita, an alternative shita to what we're about to say, but generally speaking, miyun takes place as long as she has not reached na'arus with her husband. However, once she's reached na'arus, once she's reached age 12, she no longer can do miyun, and if she wants to leave after that, she'll have to get a formal divorce. It just so happens that at that age, at 12, she now, if she happens to be a Yavama, she had been married and her husband had died, leaving no children. But the dead husband left a surviving brother. In the event that the brother does not want to be miyabim, do yibum with her, doesn't want to marry her, so there's a shoe removal ceremony known as chalitza, and that involves the woman removing a shoe from the foot of the surviving brother. That ceremony, the chalitza ceremony, cannot take place if the girl is a ktana. So it starts only when she reaches na'arus. So at that very point that she reaches na'arus, she can now do chalitza. She can, if she were rabbinically married to somebody, she at that age, she would not be able to do miyun anymore. Now the Gemara. Omar of Yudah Marav, Zu Divrei Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah that essentially says a Nara cannot do Miyun is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. Avol Chachomim Omrim. Chachomim, we'll see later on, is Rebbe Yehuda. It's a reference to Rebbe Yehuda. The Chachomim Omrim, Yesh Miyun B'mokom Chalitza. You could have a situation of a girl who's at an age that, had she been married to some man rabbinically, she could continue doing Miyun. And that's that. At that same age, if she were an almona, and there was a surviving brother, she could also do chalitza. I'm not sure that we made it clear enough that the case of miyun and chalitza are talking about two different girls. We're focusing on the age. That's all, just the age. So that if you're at an age that you could do miyun, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could also be at an age that if you were under different circumstances, you could also do chalitza. The Sanya. And now we have a source that shows these two shitas. Ad mosai abas mima enes. Until what age do we make an allowance for miyun? Ad shitovi shtei saras. Divrei b'meir. Until she produces two pubic hairs. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Achiyarbe Hashokhar Alavon. Rabbita says that the right to do miyun continues beyond the mere appearance of the two hairs. Rabbita says it continues until the two hairs develop a considerable length to them. And that's what this expression of Yarbe Hashokhar Alavon means. It means that the hairs grow a considerable length. At that age, one should realize she's passed into the Na'arus period. Rabbi Yehuda is providing for her to do miyun still, and at that same age she would be, if under different circumstances, she would be entitled to do chalitza. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah, let's learn read our topic heading under the No say heading in the outside margin. Hama'avar bein Yom Tov l'Shabbos. The passage of time between a Yom Tov and Shabbos. This idea of passing from one to the other. You can have a case of Yom Tov coming out on a Friday, and that leads into Shabbos. You can have a case of Shabbos after which there is a Yom Tov on a Sunday, so you're going from Shabbos to a Yom Tov. By way of general points, there was a practice in the Zman of the Gemara, and in some places this practice continues today, that a shofar or a horn or a siren, in the Zman of the Gemara there was a shofar that was blown on every Friday afternoon toward the end of the day, announcing the coming in of Shabbos. For our purposes, the tkia, the blowing of the shofar, was a means of announcing that you're going from a lower form of sanctity, and every week you're dealing with a true weekday, a very mundane situation, to Shabbos, which represents a day of holiness. Our Mishnah introduces this thing, a new facet, that even when you're going from one level of holiness to the other, if you're going up a level, you're going from Yom Tov, which is a lower level of holiness than Shabbos, you're going from a Yom Tov day into Shabbos, there too is a shofar blowing. The Gemara will raise the issue of the need for a distinction made in the way the shofar was blown on a standard Friday to Shabbos as opposed to a Yom Tov to Shabbos, but we'll see that in the Gemara. In contrast, when you're moving from a higher level of Kedusha down, as happens every week when you're going from Shabbos to a weekday, we have a Havdalah ceremony and a Havdalah recitation. Havdalah. Havdalah, therefore, is going from higher to lower. And just like we said before with regard to Friday, you can go from Shabbos to a Yom Tov, where you're not going from sanctity into total mundane, but you are going from higher level of sanctity to lower level of sanctity. And that generates a need for Havdalah. That's by way of introduction. Now, turning to the Mishnah. Kol mokom shiesh tkia ein havdalah. When you are tkia, as we said, represents going from lower to higher, so there's no havdalah. On a practical level, it would mean that you're, even though you're exiting a Yom Tov at the Mariv davening, at the nighttime prayers following that Yom Tov, you're not going to recite any Havdalah passage because you're going from Yom Tov into Shabbos. V'chol mokoim sheyesh Havdalah, if you have a situation that you will be reciting Havdalah, ain tkia. The Mishnah explains itself. Yom Tov Shechalios, and we have here a number one, there are two cases. Yom Tov, that turns out, well, case one, Be'erev Shabbos. That means Friday was a Yom Tov. And you're then going to be going from that into a Shabbos. Toikin V'lo Mavdilin. You're going from Yom Tov into Shabbos, a higher level of sanctity. So there is a blowing of the shofar, but no Havdalah. B'motzoi Shabbos. This B'motzoi Shabbos is coming from the opening phrase of Yom Tov Shechalios, and that's why I had a colon earlier on the line, so that you can read this number two as a case as Yom Tov Shechalios B'motzoi Shabbos. That Sunday is a Yom Tov, so you're going from Shabbos into a Yom Tov. Mavdilin v'lo toikin. Then there is a Havdalah passage, prayer, and there is no shofar blowing. Ketzad mavdilin. When you're going from Shabbos to Yom Tov, how, or in terms of text, what is recited when you're going from Shabbos to Yom Tov? So we have two opinions. The first is the Tanakama Ha'mavdil Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh. One indicates that a separation between two days of holiness. Rabbi Dosa is even more specific in his text. He says Bein Kodesh Chomor L'Kodesh HaKal. you announce in the Havdalah passage prayer, you announce we're going from a high level or a stringent level of sanctity to a more lenient level of sanctity. The Gemara now asks, Heifi Tokea. Rashi explains, as we explained before, that since our Mishnah is not talking about the weekly blowing of shofar, but we're talking about a special circumstance where you're going from a Yom Tov to Shabbos, therefore we have to blow in such a way that we show this distinction. In other words, that by listening to the blowing, you understand it's not the common weekly transition from a standard Friday to Shabbos. We should point out, before learning the continuation of the Gemara, the standard weekly blowing of the shofar involved the blowing of a tkiah followed by a trua. There's more detail to the actual blowing and notes, if you will, but for our purposes, for the sake of simplicity, this will suffice. There was a tkiah, is a, for those of you who are familiar with the Rosh Hashanah shofar blowing, so it's a single long blast. That's a tkiah. The trua is a rapid staccato type notes or blowing. So on a standard transition from a weekday Friday to Shabbos, there were two separate blasts. So it was a tkiah, and then a pause, take a breath, and a trua. The pause and take a breath is very significant for the sake of contrast that we're about to learn now. So in our case, since we require a demonstrable difference, Heichi Tokea, how do you do it? How do you demonstrate this difference? Amar Rav Yehuda, and to this we have two opinions, Rav Yehuda and Rav Asi on the next line. Amar Rav Yehuda, Tokea umiria mitoch tkia. You start the tkia blast, this single long blast, and without any pause whatsoever, switch into the trua. Maria is a lotion of trua. So you start with a single long blast, and immediately after you blew enough of a long blast, flip into a staccato blowing without any pause whatsoever. Rav Asi Omar Tokea Maria Beneshimo Achas. He says you have a single blast and the staccato blast, don't take any breath between them. However, even with the same breath, there is still room, so to speak, for a pause. So you start the single blast, pause without taking a new breath of air, and then finish with the trua. Both of these opinions, as we explained, there was no taking a breath. That shows a distinction between what you do on this event as opposed to what you do every week. Askin Rav Asi Behutzel Kishmaitse. Rav Asi established in Hutzel, which is the name of a town, like his own teaching, which would mean that there was a they would practice like he taught, namely a tkiah with a pause, no breath, and then the trua. Meisvei, we have a Tanaic source which raises a problem. It says Yom Tov Shechalios Be'erev Shabbos. That means Friday is a Yom Tov, and Shabbos is about to come in after this, after the Friday. Toiken v'lo yimerian. We dashed underlined lo merian. There's no trua whatsoever. My lav. What does this imply? Lo merian klal. Does it not imply that there's no trua whatsoever? And that would be against both Rav Yehuda and Rav Asi. They mentioned, they took into account a trua. According to this Tanaic source, there would be a very big difference between the Friday Yom Tov case going into Shabbos from, as opposed to every week, where in every week there is a trua, and on Friday that's Yom Tov, there would be no trua whatsoever. The Gemara answers, loy. That's not the way to understand the source, namely to suggest that there was no true whatsoever. Rather, Rav Yehuda metaretz l'tameh, Rav Asi metaretz l'tameh. Each one who offered their opinions before will explain this source according to what they said previously. Rav Yehuda metaretz l'tameh, he explains according to his approach, lo merian b'fnei atzma elo mitoch tkiya. The lo merian that was mentioned in the source meant you don't do a separate trua. Rather, the trua is done, but as an immediate follow from the tkiya, as we mentioned, without any pause. Rav Asi metaretz l'tamei, that when the source says lo merian, it means b'shtei neshimos, that there's no trua blast by having taken a separate breath. Elo b'neshima achas, but there is a trua provided it's done with the same original breath. Uvamotzoi Shabbos, our Mishnah taught that when you have a Motzoi Shabbos, there would be a Havdalah, no Tkiya, and then the Mishnah discussed the text of the Havdalah. This section of Gemara deals with the issue of the text. Hecha Omar Lo. Our Mishnah had mentioned that you say Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh. Where do you say that in the Havdalah passage, the Havdalah prayer? We have two opinions. Amar Yehuda B'Chasimosa, at the end of the passage. In other words, you would start off with the standard Havdalah text, HaMavdil Bein Kodesh Chol Bein Or L'Chol Sheba Yisrael Amim. Then when you get to the end of the text and you have your final bracha, you would say Baruch Ato Hashem Hamavdil Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh. And let's remember, we're going from Shabbos to Yom Tov. Yom Tov is also a day of Kodesh, of sanctity. V'chein Om Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman also says Bechasimasa, that you make reference to this Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh at the signing off of the passage, the Havdalah passage. Rav Sheshes Breder of Idi Omar Af Bepsichosa. Rav Sheshes says that even at the opening of the passage, one should mention Hamavdil Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh Bein Or L'Choshech Bein Yisrael Amim. The less Hilchasok Avosei. However, the Gemara rules against that, namely, no necessity of mentioning Bein Kodesh L'Kodesh at the beginning of the Havdalah passage. Rashi elaborates a little bit more on the topic, but for our purposes, it's sufficient to realize that the Gemara is not accepting the approach of Rav Sheshes Breder of Idi. Rabbi Dosa, in presenting his opinion in the Mishnah as to what is the special text of the Shabbos passage into Yom Tov Havdalah, Dosa said, Bein Kodesh Chomer L'Kodesh Kahakal. V'les Hilchaso Kavosei. The Gemara does not accept Rabbi Dosa's approach, and the reason given for that is found in the Rashi. That by mentioning the that Yom Tov is a Kedusha Hakal, it's a sort of deprecation of Yom Tov, and Rashi says this three lines from the bottom when he says that we don't follow Rabbi Dosa, the lo mizalzalina b'Yom Tov the grosa kodesh hakal. That's the Gemara's feeling about Rabbi Dosa's approach. The Gemara continues after having said v'les hilchos kavosei. But we won't follow Rabbi Dosa's approach. I'm Rabbi Zera. Yom Tov Shechalios Be'emtz Shabbos. Yom Tov that comes out in the middle of the week. The word Shabbos, at times when you're learning the Gemara, means a week. So if Yom Tov comes out in the middle of a week, comes out on a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and Yom Tov finishes in the middle of a week. Omer, then the text one would recite is as follows. Hamavdil bein kodesh l'chol, bein ur l'choshech, bein Yisrael amim, ubein yom hashvi'i l'sheshes yemei ha-ma'aseh. We've dashed underline the reason this piece of Gemara is brought here. You are going to mention, when you're finishing Yom Tov, let's say on a Tuesday night, is the end of Yom Tov, you're going to say amongst the rest of the examples of Havdolah in the passage, you're going to mention Ubein Yom HaShvi L'Sheish Yemei Ma'aseh. You'll ask, but I'm not going to. Yom HaShvi means the seventh day, a distinction between the seventh day of the and the rest of the 6 days. This is not the seventh day. Tuesday's in the middle of the week. So why is that? My time, why am I mentioning in the Havdolah prayer when leaving Yom Tov that comes out of the middle of the week, why am I mentioning Bein Yom HaShvili L'Sheish Yemei Ma'aseh? Answer, Seder Havdolos Humone. The text of the Havdolah requires the enumeration of different distinctions that are made or cited in the Torah. And if this particular section is not here to address the specific occasion of leaving Yom Tov to the weekday, but rather it's part of the standard text which demands listing off different havdolos, different distinctions that are made in the Torah. And amongst the different distinctions that are made in the Torah, you have the Kodesh Baruch Hu made a distinction between or L'choshech. You have that in the days of the Torah where it describes the creation of the world. You also have distinctions made between Kodesh and Chol. And in that spirit, we mention Bein Yom HaShvi'i L'Sheshes Yemei Ma'aseh. However, as far as the citation of Yom HaShvi'i here as being associated with the specific event at hand, that's simply not the case. It's there to form the list of distinctions that are required to be mentioned in the Havdolah passage. For more information on this particular topic, we recommend your learning the sugya in Psochim Daf Kuf Gimel Amid Beis and Kuf Dalid Amid Aleph. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.